You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I am Jason Whitlock. Thanks for joining us on this day before Friday. And you know what today is, Jim?
What's today, Jay?
Football. It's football day. It's the birth of the NFL 2021 season.
It is.
It's one of the greatest days of the year, or used to be, before the NFL went completely woke. But I got to admit, I'm kind of fired up. Cowboys, Buccaneers tonight. Thursday night football. Are you ready for some football?
Eh. Come on, man.
Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, and you gonna end?
Because I'm afraid what they might do, man. I'm afraid what they might do, what woke message they might come across. I'm gonna be honest with you, man.
I didn't watch a lot of preseason football. You're right. Listen, we have a fantastic show. We're going to start by talking some football with LeVar Arrington, one of the greatest college football players of all time. Terrific NFL player as well. Friend of the program. We'll get to him in just a few minutes. We're also going to roll out of Chicago, talk to Greg Couch. He's written a hell of a piece about Nike and how their destruction of athletes and Naomi Osaka being added to Nike's body count. Uncle Jimmy has some headlines he's going to go over with me and a little new little twist and segment. But first, you know what I like to do. I like to start fires. And let's start an NFL fire. The list of quarterbacks with contracts inferior to Dak Prescott's is long and accomplished. Tom Brady and his 7 Super Bowl titles are on the list. So are Aaron Rodgers and his 3 MVP trophies. Ed Ben Roethlisberger and his 2 Super Bowl rings. Russell Wilson's on the list. Matt Ryan and his MVP trophy. They're there too. In 5 NFL seasons, Dak Prescott won a playoff game once, beating the Seahawks in a wild card game 3 years ago. That completes his list of amazing accomplishments and justifies his status as the 3rd highest paid player in the league. Only Kansas City quarterback Patrick Mahomes, $45 million, and Buffalo quarterback Josh Allen, $43 million, earn more than the $40 million average the Cowboys will pay Prescott over the next 4 seasons. When the Cowboys kick off the NFL season tonight facing Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Prescott will walk out of the locker room feeling the full weight of a contract that says he can single-handedly turn a loss into a victory. But can he? Does anyone really believe Dak Prescott is as potent a force as Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, Wilson, or even Josh Allen? No one believes that, nor should they. Prescott is a solid franchise quarterback playing for an owner desperate to prove his former coach wasn't the brains behind the Cowboys' 1990s dynasty. Prescott is overpaid because Jerry Jones is still locked in a feud with Jimmy Johnson over credit. Desperation compromises decision-making. It turns hoes into housewives, reality TV stars, and dementia patients into presidents.
Ouch.
And average quarterbacks into lottery winners. This past offseason, Prescott hit the jackpot, baiting Jones into a $160 million contract for production that warranted half of that. I'm not mad at Dak. He and his agent, Todd France, should be congratulated for playing Jones like turntables at an old school rap concert. DTMD, AKA Dak and Todd making dollars.
Oh God.
They kept it strictly business, Jim.
Oh God.
They completed unfinished business. Conducted business as usual. Remembered that business is never personal. And now, they're back in business. Did you catch all those, my references?
Yes.
The first five albums of the iconic rap group, EPMD. If not, you get the Bozak. All right, but let me get back to Dak. He's going to learn that life as a $40 million quarterback is more difficult than life as the underdog overachiever. The 2016 fourth round draft pick was a feel-good story when, as a rookie, he replaced injured Tony Romo and led the Cowboys to a 13-3 regular season. Everybody loved Dak's underdog story. And for the next 4 years, the media rooted for Dak to become the next Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, or Joe Montana, late-round quarterbacks who became superstars. Instead, Dak has more in common with Kirk Cousins, Matt Hasselbeck, and Mark Brunell, late-round quarterbacks who are or were solid NFL starters. Dak is no longer being paid to be solid, though. His contract demands that he be great. Happiness is based on expectations. The same people who have been satisfied with Dak's solid performance will now be disappointed when the third highest paid player remains a solid quarterback. The list of disappointed people will include Dak's 52 teammates. Excuse another rap analogy, but Prescott will be known this year as the notorious D-A-K. More money, more problems. You're nobody until your teammates kill you.
Wow, bro.
Starting tonight against the defending Super Bowl champion Buccaneers, Dak's teammates will expect him to be worth an additional touchdown. Aaron Rodgers is going to make $33 million this season. His Packers teammates believe he's worth every dime because they believe he's a touchdown better than every quarterback not named Mahomes, Brady, or Wilson. Do the Cowboys believe that about Dak? Everybody always wants more money. Few people want or can deal with the extra responsibility that goes along with more money. Most people make excuses. Most people collapse beneath the weight of heightened expectations. Oh, they have occasional moments of greatness, but the day-to-day grind of greatness eventually grinds them out. That's what I expect to happen to Dak over the next two seasons. $40 million is too much weight for Dak Prescott. His teammates will be the first to see it. Initially, they're gonna grab the bar and help him lift all that weight. It won't take long for their agents, friends, wives, and girlfriends to say, why are you helping him all the time? He's supposed to be helping you. Mm. He's making $40 million. Mm. Once that happens, the feel-good story will disappear. NFL reporters won't be able to ignore the whispers among agents and Dak's teammates that the Cowboys employ an overpaid quarterback. Because of the salary cap, being an overpaid player is far worse than being a bad player. You can bench a bad player. An overpaid teammate, he costs you money. Dak Prescott would be a far better quarterback if he had the same contract as Tom Brady. Brady's worth whatever he demands. He's on a two-year deal that will pay him $50 million. Brady gets it. In order for Dak to win in the postseason, Dallas needs a defense that equals its offense. Cowboys don't have that. Can't afford it. To win consistently, they're going to have to score 30 points per game. That pressure is going to crush Dak Prescott. Mmm! Now that's a fire.
That's fire. That's nice. That's nice.
That's all you got.
That's
let me
nice.
Let me go out to LA.
Nice. That's nice.
Let's bring in LeVar Arrington. LeVar, I made a lot of rap analogies.
Yes, you
more
did.
More money, more problems.
Yes, you did.
I want to start here, and I want, you know, is Dak under the most pressure is one question, but what do you think about my narrative that his teammates are going to look at him and judge him differently now that he's a $40 million man?
Well, I'll say this. He will be judged differently, but I don't think it's necessarily from the 100% vantage point that you provided. I think a lot of times money equals respect in locker rooms as well. So sometimes you may not live up to the expectation of what you are supposed to be as a football player, but nonetheless, your paycheck is still your paycheck. So you got to look at everything else that goes into play. It's not just what's going on the field with. It's the type of car he's driving. It's the type of events that he's going to, or the type of events that he's participating in, the people that are around him, the company that he's keeping. So when I was the guy for Washington, when we flew to games, I sat up front with Dan Snyder and played chess with him on the team plane. So there's levels to this, you know what I mean? And so for what it's worth, players will probably look to want to learn from Dak Prescott. Players will want to look to gain access through Dak Prescott. So he's the one that becomes the cool kid that might have not have told funny jokes, but everybody's laughing at it now. You know what I mean? And it's just kind of one of those things. So I think there does come the amount of pressure in terms of being looked at as the franchise guy. But if there's an advantage that Dak Prescott has going into this season is he's already been the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. And that in itself, year by year, is a ton of pressure. So if he can compartmentalize correctly and not make the money a part of what he is as a player, I mean, think about this. You pointed out all the shortcomings and all the lack thereofs and why he shouldn't be and why he wouldn't be and why, you know, all these different, you know, stats and records and playoff berths. But think about this. If he just got that contract, doing all those things that you pointed out as obvious, right, then he can only go up from here. Right. So now if you're looking at the ceiling as being something different, his floor would have to be where he's at right now. Right. So if you're looking at what he's accomplished thus far and him getting the money that he's gotten, we can sit here and say, well, he's not deserving of the money. But you could also look at it and say, if he can accomplish more than what he's accomplished already, which is very possible in terms of winning. So now you're talking about you can justify what it is that Dak Prescott is. So I think there's pressure on him, but the amount of pressure that I think people may be thinking he's under, I don't think he's under that pressure. They haven't won. They have that. He's won, but they haven't really won. And so to me, I think that he's in between that, like he's in that football purgatory type of space. He's in between good and bad. I'm not going to say he's good or great. I'm just not going to say he's bad or horrible either. So he has this opportunity this season with a healthy, seemingly healthy line outside of dealing with COVID protocol with Zach Martin. You have Lyle, you have Tyron. They're supposed to be ready to go. You have three of the best. You have a receiving core that can compete with the best of them. You're going against the number one receiving core in the Tampa Bay Bucs tonight. I think that this is a great opportunity, a great platform on national television, the only show in town tonight, to set a statement in terms of how you should be viewed from what your floor is. I got paid off of the floor. I didn't get paid off my ceiling. I got paid off of the floor. And that's what separates and differentiates him from the Patrick Mahomes or the Russell Wilsons and all those guys you're naming. Those guys have won Super Bowls already. You know, so when you think about it from that standpoint, I mean, Russell Wilson has yet to get an MVP vote. Dak Prescott is ahead of Russell Wilson on that list. So we can pick and choose what makes the pressure. But when you think about it, I'm just saying, Jay Witt, he's actually in a position to look like a gangster, like a real football goon.
LeVarrington.
Yes.
LeVarrington.
Ever yes. Call Dak Prescott a gangster. Again, man, I will have you personally barred from this. Don't
he's
you
from
ever
the
call
city,
him
isn't
that. Jim, I'm going to tell you, the telltale sign when LeVarrington is out over his skis with me, he always tries to talk long because he wants me to forget some of the dumb stuff he says along the way. He don't want me to push back. And so keeps talking and talking and talking.
He did, but so he didn't look at the monitor and see you nodding off? He didn't see you sitting up here?
No, he's hoping that's what will happen. Because I'm going to go back to what he first said. When he told the story about sitting up in the first class with Dan Snyder and playing chess, And you know why your teammates didn't trip, LeVar? Because at that time you were balling and nobody was questioning. Oh, that's one of the best linebackers in the NFL. That's the, he's carrying our defense. He's the quarterback of our defense.
He's the number one draft pick.
He's number two overall pick. He's sitting up there with Dan Snyder because he's supposed to be, because he's playing at that level. Dak Prescott is the third highest paid player in the NFL. Where do you think he ranks in terms of production in the NFL? All positions. Not, we know he's not a top five quarterback. You start the third highest paid player, LeVar, and you think some of these guys, a lot of these guys in this locker room are going to be like, hey, man, they paying you to win games and make a huge difference. He ain't never been that guy, LeVar. And you can't, there's guys in that locker room that's going to have a problem if he's not a difference maker, a real difference maker this season.
Well, I mean, first thing I'll say is the ones that have the problems are the ones that had problems to begin with. You know, haters do exist in locker rooms as well. You know, there's always going to be for a Jesus, there's a, who was the other guy that sold him out? What was his
Judas.
Name? Judas. Judas. You got to always have. You got to always have a Judas.
Did he just? He said Judas.
Father's a minister.
What?
You got to always have a Judas in the locker room.
Who was
you
his
know
daddy?
What I mean? Like,
yeah,
right.
What does daddy do?
Arrington.
He sold cars.
Moogala Moogala. Anyway, what I'm saying.
Go ahead, LeVarrington.
A hater is going to be a hater. All right. So if there's teammates in there that don't like his contract, it's just because they just didn't get that contract. It ain't that it's Dak. It's just that they didn't get that money. They didn't get that contract. But you're not a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, and you're not Dak Prescott, so you weren't going to get that contract anyway. But that's some of the fundamental things that some of these guys don't understand when they're playing in the game. They overvalue what their position is or what their standing is sometimes, and you can run into trouble with those type of guys. Like, there might be a guy who gets to the quarterback, thinks he's worth that type of money. There might be a guy that catches the ball. He might think he's worth that money. Somebody who runs the ball, somebody who blocks for him. Those are the people that are going to have issues with Dak Prescott's contract. But I don't think it's because they have an issue with him and his performance level, because they ultimately play a part in that as well, if they're going to win or lose.
Jimmy.
Yeah, man.
I never told you this story. I'm going to tell it now.
Oh,
so
no.
So we're doing Speak for Yourself.
Okay.
LeVar comes over to my house and says, you giving Jimmy too much playing time.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. He's cutting into my airtime. Mm. If you gave Jimmy less airtime, you could give me more airtime.
Okay.
And so for this man to sit here and ask, any of these players that got a problem with the money Dak's making, I mean, my God, they're just haters.
Okay.
As if there's no hate in LeVar's heart. As if he's never sat in the locker room and questioned the money that somebody's making.
You know,
I heard the stories about. Yeah.
That's true.
Wait a minute. Since we're telling stories, hold on.
I was hating.
Since we're telling stories, can I tell a story about you? Can I tell a story about you?
Yeah, go ahead. Very.
Now, this here story happened when you was leaving Fox.
Yeah.
When we didn't know if you was leaving or if you was coming back.
Yeah.
Okay. And LeVar called, look at his face. LeVar called me on a Sunday because he said, hey, man, you think that they're going to call me to take Jason's spot? I said, LeVar, that's a true story. I said, man, I don't feel comfortable.
This is all true.
I don't feel comfortable talking about this, about Jason.
Burning bread.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm like, hey, man, he might be back. And this is LeVarrington's exact words. Hey, man. I talked to the doctor.
He ain't coming back.
He
ain't coming back. He ain't coming back, so it ain't no need for us to out of the way.
I said, man, we in the hospital room. He right here.
Hey, man, he can't hear
anyway.
Us. He ain't coming back.
He gonna die anyway. R.I.P. We love you, Whit. R.I.P. But ain't no reason for us to keep suffering.
Rest in power,
you up
bro.
Out of here.
LeVar, can you deny these allegations?
I'm. You know what? I could deny them, but I think it's way better to own them. I'm going to own each thing that y'all said. I'm taking ownership over both of them.
I just can't believe you sitting
hey,
here
you see
acting
that Fox
like,
logo?
And I know you're.
Hey, y'all see that Fox logo? Y'all thought I was playing. I ain't playing.
Look, I know your guy, Micah Parsons, is on the Cowboys, and that's a guy you have mentored and developed and loved. But and I know you don't want to breathe any negativity into the air. So let's not pretend like we're not talking about Dak and the Cowboys. I'm just going to ask you again. Guys in locker rooms talk about the money people make. But if somebody isn't performing.
You got to understand, they have been losing together. They have been losers together. If you're in a winning locker room, what you're saying holds a whole lot of weight, right? Like if you're in the New England Patriot locker room, you see what's going on with TJ Watt in Pittsburgh right now. They win. When you're talking about winning organizations, you are 100% correct. 100%. But Dallas, they've lost together for over a decade or so, right? You're talking back to the early 90s. The early 90s is the last time these guys were winning, early to mid 90s. So you're talking about generation of guys who have lost as Dallas Cowboys. And I get that because I played in an organization that has had generational losing, right? You don't look at things the same. In fact, you praise a guy for being able to get paid in such horrible conditions. We ain't winning. So if you're getting paid while we ain't winning, you can't sit there and look at the guy next to you and say, oh, he just got awarded a contract. Oh, he doesn't deserve his money. We've been losing together. Them playoff games we've lost, we lost them together. So you got guys that have been there, that have been a part of that losing. You got new guys that don't want to be a part of the losing that probably believe that Dak can be the answer. I need him to be the answer. I don't need him to not be, like, I don't need to focus in on what was. I'm here now. For someone like Micah Parsons, they're looking at it like, if I do my part, I look at what Dak Prescott could possibly do. We got a chance to be able to do something. I don't think there's anybody in that locker room that looks at Dak Prescott as not the franchise guy for this team. So if you have that scenario playing out, there's a whole lot of relevance to what you're saying. But this is a losing organization right now. Everybody's looking for a win. And if you can look at Dak Prescott and win in certain cases off the field, you know, what he represents as a personality in your community, you're going to take those wins instead of trying to replace that because it's comfortable, it's safe, and everybody's looking for that win. So I don't think anybody's looking at Dak Prescott like he's not the franchise guy for the Cowboys. You don't have to convince the whole league that. You just got to make sure everybody in that locker room believes that.
What happens tonight, Cowboys, Buccaneers?
I think it's going to be a better game than what people are thinking it's going to be. I know the line on it is 8.5 or something like that, 7.5, 8. I do believe that Tampa Bay will win by more than one possession. So they'll need, you know, Dallas will need more than one possession to win the game. But I don't think that it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be a slaughterhouse loss. I don't think it's going to be, are we questioning Dak or questioning Mike McCarthy after the loss? I think that it will be that they just were not the better team on tonight.
If he was on the telephone, you just put it down and just let him keep talking.
I really do. And that is what I do. But listen, the man just said, I think it's going to be a better game than what people think. The line is 8. Yeah. I think it's going to be a 2-possession game.
He went out on the limb, didn't he?
So what he just said, it's going to be exactly what Vegas said it is, a 2-possession game. It's going to be exactly what we think it's going to be. Dallas isn't really going to be in this thing, and they're going to lose by 2 possessions. That is 8 to 12 points, 8 to 13.
Yeah, but that's not a blowout, though. That's not a blowout.
Jason.
You could still lose by that.
You know what's happening?
Vegas
you know what's
is
happening
saying
with
one
LeVar.
Possession.
What? Go ahead, go.
You know what's happening with LeVar? LeVar knows that there's another position opening up at Fox at that betting show. He's trying to show that he can,
did you see
he
what
can
I
play
just
the
did?
Betting odds, too.
Did y'all see what I just did? I said the line. I stated the line. I said what Vegas is thinking and did it concisely. And I talked a whole lot for all my radio people out there. That's what I do. I try to get on here and perform.
You
know what I mean?
And you are performing.
Yes.
Do you think Tampa's going to repeat as Super Bowl champions?
I don't even think they're going to make the Super Bowl.
That's very good, LaVar.
Who you like in the NFC?
I like Green Bay to go. I think Green Bay is going to go to the Super Bowl. I think it makes sense. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. I made my predictions today. I believe the Ravens and the Green Bay Packers will be in the Super Bowl.
Ooh, Lamar Jackson.
I'm sorry, LaVar. It seems like we having a bad connection. Seems like we're about to lose. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to get to this other. There's one other thing I want to talk to you about in depth, but I saw your notes where you think Jameis Winston and the Saints are actually going to win the division over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I think they have a chance.
Why?
I think they have a chance because of seeing, again, I think people undervalue what Jameis Winston brings to the table. If you're looking at his, well, I mean, crab legs under the table is creative, but it's kind of, it's stale and old though. It's probably as stinky as an old crab leg that he used. But I think that in terms of what he's been able to accomplish production wise, you take that and you get away from those turnovers. I mean, that you don't. Here's the difference between what Jameis was in Tampa Bay and what he is in New Orleans. In Tampa, they were looking for Jameis to be something that he's not, which is an uncontested leader. He's a leader, but he's not the leader of leaders. He's not a lead alone leader. He needs a leader on top of him, like Sean Payton. So he's not in a position where he has to put himself in a position to be something to these other players that he's really not. So now all he has to do is focus in on being a quarterback. And I think that for him, that's a relief for one. And for two, you know, the expectations are kind of, there's different spectrums of it. A lot of people don't know what they believe Jameis Winston will be. And to me, I think that the talent is unquestionable. His arm talent is unquestionable. And to me, I think that the play calling and the strategizing, the methodical, you know, approach to game plans by Sean Payton and his coaching staff, I think is second to none. So I believe that Jameis has an opportunity to be very successful with this team. And after having a year to learn it, I really think that they have a strong opportunity to actually win the division this year.
It's I hope you're right, because I sometimes like Jameis, but it's an odd thing that he could be in Tampa and they could be dog piss. They change quarterbacks and win a Super Bowl. And somehow now he's going to go to New Orleans, where when he just there was addition by subtraction in Tampa. Subtract Jameis, put a quarterback in that doesn't turn the ball over, we win a Super Bowl. And somehow he's going to go to New Orleans and perform better because Sean Payton's a better coach than Bruce Arians or who?
Well, no, I'm not saying he's a better coach.
I hope you're right.
I'm not saying he's a better coach than Bruce Arians. I'm saying that Jameis Winston had one season with Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians still was dealing with a loser culture mentality as well. If you keep in mind, Jameis had three different head coaches during his time there. Three. You know how formative your young years are? I think he spent, 5 years there? In 5 years' time, you had three different head coaches. I can't hold everything on Jameis on this one. That's culture. And you know what Bruce Arians had to do? He had to change the culture. Now, if he had given Jameis more time, is Jameis able to do it? I don't know. Maybe not, because the damage had already been done. But you bring in a winner like Tom Brady with the amount of talent that they had. All Tom Brady had to do was get people on the same page and get them believing. Are you going to believe Tom Brady? I'm going to believe Tom Brady. So he got them to believe, and that changed the culture. Everybody's not going to be able to change a culture like how Tom Brady helped change the culture with Bruce Arians. You don't have to do that in New Orleans. They're already winners. They already expect the win. They already have a winning culture. And so by putting him in that area and him knowing what his role is very clearly, he took a whole year, humble pie for a whole entire year, and just learned and figured out what New Orleans was all about. And now, even now, had to win the job over Taysom Hill this preseason. I think Jameis Winston is primed and prepped and in a great position to be a positive contributor, so much so that they may win the division.
Let me get to my final point.
Is he done?
Yeah, he's done.
He's done? Okay.
It was Jim, that was actually good stuff. Cam Newton is going to have a little video. I wouldn't call it a press conference. He calls it Funky Fridays. He got some things he wants to get off his chest. This is going to be tomorrow. He says he's got some stuff he wants to get off his chest. What do you think he'll say? What would you like to see him say?
I think he'll address COVID. I think he'll address possibly the reason why he lost the starting job in New England. I think he'll give some type of explanation. I think the pride that he carries may lend to him wanting to clear things up as to how it ended for him in New England. I think he'll be very strategic because I don't think he wants to burn himself and not be able to possibly catch on with another team. I think that this quarterback situation is a real carousel situation in the league this year. So I think that he's going to play it safe, play it close to the vest. If I could have him say whatever it is that I would want him to say, I would honestly just have him be gracious about the opportunity because in all, you know, New England, for good or bad in this last situation, they did give him an opportunity when no one else did. And they also gave him the opportunity to win the starting job. Keep in mind, in all of this, Jarrett Stidham should be the one going on his IG Live, giving I'm going to tell y'all how I feel about my feelings as the way things have gone down in New England. But we don't see him doing that. So for me, I just think that I would be gracious. I would advise him to be gracious and be kind about his time in New England and just looking to the future and stand really ready to go and poised to be a starter for somebody if the opportunity presents itself.
Hey, man, it's been 31 minutes and 13 seconds. I've had to sit here and listen to all that. Can we please get down to the real reason that we had you come on this show, LeVar?
Tell me.
Can we please talk about these doggone Ball State? Remember Jason talking about how great Ball State's going to set the NC, they're going to the college on fire. Can we please talk about Ball State and Penn State? Please.
Do you want to do that? Do you want to do that?
Have you heard this man talking about Ball State?
Are you still going to the game? You probably don't want to go see that.
That should tell you something, LeVar.
Yeah, you don't want to go see that.
I watched y'all knock out Wisconsin and Madison. Took a little wind out of my sails.
You was talking bad to me, and then I ain't seen no text messages all week.
He's good at that.
Look, hey, I remain confident.
Hit hard sometimes.
I remain confident. I'll just say that we saved our energy against Western Illinois. I think we were looking ahead to Penn State. And
why would you do something like that? Why would you look ahead to Penn State?
Because.
Look at him scratching
his
head.
I'm looking forward to fighting Brock.
Let me think my way through this one. Let me think my way through this one. What do I say about
Ball
State?
Yeah, I
got to
be careful. But I feel confident we're going to have a great season. I feel confident we'll be competitive.
After the Penn State game.
We'll be competitive in Happy Valley. I can't wait to watch the game.
You won't be competitive
at home.
How many touchdowns you think you'll lose by? You'll keep it within how many?
Spread is 22. I feel very confident we'll cover.
We'll beat that.
I feel very confident we'll cover.
We'll beat that. That's your win?
We will cover.
That's your win?
Huh?
That's your win, 22? Y'all cover?
No.
Y'all won't cover. Y'all will not cover. I'm just telling you.
Dude, you ain't giving him 24 points.
I'm trying to help
points.
You.
No. He's.
I'll give you the 22 right on this show. I'll give you the 22.
Yeah, I know. We're going to make a bet tomorrow.
Take the 22 points right now.
We'll make a bet tomorrow because I'm going to bring LeVar back on tomorrow to talk about tonight's Thursday night football.
Bringing me back on. He's bringing me back on. Take that, Jimmy.
But you're not cutting my pay like you want to cut Dax.
All right, we got to go. Great job, LeVar. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. All right.
Still got to figure out his hair, dude.
He can't figure it out. How you going to figure it out?
I don't know. Somewhere we got to figure it out. He's like Cam Newton, man, with the hair.
Yeah, you know.
All right, we got that new package yesterday. Jim and I, see, we got that new raspberry cheesecake over there. They also sent us two of their other new products as well, their coconut marshmallow, which is low in sugars with only 6 grams and only 130 calories, and their new coconut almond protein balls.
Fire.
We talked about their latest peanut butter brownie flavor yesterday as well. Both of these pack the same great taste and flavor punch that you get from other protein bars that they provide. And when you order these online, you also get the opportunity to get the next great flavors before they are available to everyone else. So stop waiting and order these right now. Go to built.com and use promo code FEARLESS to save 15% off your first order. Use promo code FEARLESS for 15% off at built.com. Greg Couch.
They're really good, man. They're really good. I'm not kidding.
All right, welcome back. All right, Uncle Jimmy, it's time for your favorite sports columnist, Chicago's very own small college tennis coach,
Greg Horshack Couch.
Horshack. What you talking about? Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter.
Yeah, that's what his hair is starting to look like. He really do.
You're really showing our age. We're referencing Welcome Back, Carter. To me, Greg more looks like, Greg, I don't know if you remember the show The White Shadow, the head coach of the basketball team for The White Shadow. I think his name was Ken. I would go Ken more than Horshack.
So you calling him the White Shadow just because he's the only white dude hanging around me and you?
No. Greg, if you saw the White Shadow. I know you saw the White Shadow.
Come on, Greg. I got sunshine on a cloudy day. You got to get naked to sing that in the shower.
Say that again.
That show was completely insulting. I mean, it's just a ridiculous premise of this white coach in there. You know, my mom had a crush on the White Shadow, by the way.
Why is that a ridiculous premise? I see white coaches coaching black basketball teams all the time.
I mean, it's like it takes some white guy to come in there and, you know, be hip with the black kids. I don't know. It's very cliche. It's an embarrassing show.
Are you kidding me?
No, that's very real. I don't want to talk to you. You can't teach me anything if you... Come on, man. Look at Steve Kerr. Look, Steve Kerr wasn't accepted until he learned how to roll blunts.
There's probably some truth to that. But, man, The White Shadow is one of my favorite shows of my childhood.
Greg is going to start losing points to me if he don't stop making little asinine statements like that.
That sounded very woke, Greg. The White Shadow is a classic television show.
You just called me Horshack. That's Welcome Back, Matt.
Yeah, that's Welcome Back, Carter, which was an okay show. The White Shadow, I think I own three seasons of The White Shadow. I own the box set, I think.
On beta?
Huh?
On beta?
No, I think it's on DVD now. I think it's on DVD. Anyway, Greg has written a piece going after one of my favorite targets, Nike.
Okay.
And he's added Naomi Osaka to Nike's body count of the athletes that Nike has basically killed. Naomi Osaka announced this week she don't know when she's playing tennis again. She's been mentally crushed. And Greg, anyway, I don't want to.
Before Greg gets started, do you remember when Greg first started, when he first, his first column with us, he's like, oh, I teach tennis and this and that. And he was just a real bland guy. Look at him now.
Look at him, what?
Spitting fire.
Yeah, he needs a haircut and he's spitting fire. He's going after Nike. Greg, you explain your take on Nike and Naomi Osaka.
Well, I mean, I just think we've created a monster with Nike. I mean, Naomi Osaka was ready to replace Serena Williams as the big star of tennis. And now she's walking away, you know, crying and throwing her racket and angry. 3 years ago, she beat Serena in the U.S. Open final. And everyone just thought she was this adorable woman and, you know, the darling of tennis. And now, you know, here we are. She's throwing her racket and throwing ball into the stands and crying and saying, I don't know when I'm ever going to come back. You know, I mean, it really reminded me of watching that documentary Tiger on HBO because we saw where they talked about Tiger signing when he was 20 years old with Nike. And the executives there were having a meeting and saying, you know, should we play the race card or what should we do with Tiger? And they said, yeah, the race card. This is a lily white sport. You know, we can really grow an audience and make him the black superstar of golf. And it really wasn't a role that he was particularly prepared to take on. I mean, yes, he was a black golfer, but that's not really what he had in mind. And then they start talking about there's still clubs where I can't play. That became a big advertisement. And there was one where he was walking with Teddy Rhodes, who I think won 6 black U.S. golf championships. And you know, it was sort of his ghost he was walking on the course with. And they just turned him into this racial, you know, figure that I don't think he was prepared for. So he goes on the Oprah Winfrey show and she says, well, do you like it when people just call you the black golfer? And he says, well, no, he's bothered by it. And he invented his own term, Cablination, Caucasian, black, Indian, Asian, and that's what he sees himself as. So he just wasn't comfortable there. And I think it really led to a lot of the mistakes he made, because you know, what Nike's doing is they're creating athletes. They're not just an image, they're actually creating an athlete. They created Tiger into something that he wasn't, and they made him uncomfortable, and he fell to pieces. And I think they did the same thing now with Naomi Osaka. She went from this darling, quiet 19-year-old beating Serena Williams to someone who's, you know, wearing a different mask and Black Lives Matter and a different mask for every black person who she feels was killed unjustly. And, you know, it's just not, that's not who she necessarily is. And you have to be yourself. And so they created her. They made a lot of money on her. She's a Japanese-American woman, and the Olympics were going to be in Tokyo. So they said, this is great. You know, we can really prime her, pipe her, you know, make her a big deal. And they did it. They got all their money, and she fell to pieces because that's not who she is. And we may never see her again. It's sad.
Greg, you're hammering an excellent point, and a point that I've been, Jim, you can go all the way back to Fox Sports or anything I've written at ESPN. Over the last decade, I think Nike has been the leader. And then I saw the same documentary as Greg talking about Tiger Woods, and I'm like, man, they've been doing this for a long time. It's more pronounced now in terms of baiting their athletes, either LeBron James, Colin Kaepernick, Serena Williams. Hey, everybody hop in this racial lane, and everybody become this social justice warrior, and we're all fighting injustice. And I just think, like, for Muhammad Ali, that was authentic. He was a part of the Nation of Islam. That was a religion that was really about black liberation, black nationalism. It had a political point of view. These multimillionaire athletes today, they don't have a sophisticated political point of view. They have a financial point of view. They have a how can I gain Twitter followers and social media followers point of view. But I've tried to explain to people, and Jim, I think this is something you can relate to, and maybe Greg is something you can relate to as well, but I grew up poor. But I had no clue that I was poor. And I've tried to explain that about LeBron James. It's like, oh yeah, he grew up poor. But about 10 or 11 years old, people discovered like he's got an unlimited amount of athletic potential. And so all these people ran to help LeBron James. And because they wanted to mine that athletic talent, and they just wanted to get him across the finish line to the NBA so they could all make money. And so he didn't live the life of a typical poor child. But even if he did, I'm not sure if he would even be aware of it in terms of like what that means and what impact. LeBron James, he's 35 years old, I think, now. And my argument is, since the age of 12, the last 23 years, he's lived, at least, if not before that, he's lived a very privileged lifestyle. The dude was driving a Hummer in high school. This is not some typical poor kid. And I look at Naomi Osaka, and I'm like, this is a little Japanese, black, Asian girl that grew up on a tennis court most of the time. That's where most of her time and energy. I look at Simone Biles. You can't be that kind of gymnast without being in the gym most of the time around other little privileged kids, predominantly white. We talk about tennis and gymnastics, but somehow now they're these racial spokesmen for poor people of color and all the, and it's all fake BS. And I'm not surprised to see some of these guys, carrying this heavy burden that they're not built for, guys and girls, and they fall completely apart.
I think the evidence that it's fake is LeBron James, right? I mean, he's a social justice warrior who can't have the nerve to stand up to Nike's social injustices of China. I mean, that's the perfect proof that he's not legitimate, he's not real. I'm going to have to put this on parenting, though. I mean, I'm sympathetic. If you grow up poor and someone's throwing unbelievable, ungodly amounts of money at you, it's hard to not take it. But when you instill the value system that money is what makes you a good person or money is what makes you a happy person, I just think that that's a doomed to failure. I mean, you can't just... Like, my son is a musician, right? If I had pushed him into being a business person or an engineer, like all the suburban parents push their kids into being, he would have been a failure. He would have been miserable. He would have been what we're seeing Naomi Osaka do. She's not genuinely herself. My son's a musician. He might struggle financially. He's going to struggle financially. But he's going to be happy anyway, I think, because he'll be himself. And this whole ingenuineness of... You know, it's all about money or I'm not a good human being. I mean, it really comes down to people believing that.
Another excellent point, because I tell people this all the time. I can remember sitting in class at Ball State University. And again, I'm just going to say, I grew up poor. And particularly, I just grew up poor. And so my aspirations as a college graduate were never to be rich. I never had plans on, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. I sat in a class, and I can remember our professor told us he worked at the Philadelphia Inquirer previously, and he made like $68,000 a year as a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I said, oh, my God, I'm going to be a sports writer, and probably by the age of 40, I'm going to make $70,000. And I just thought how happy I would be. And all I do is write about sports and talk about sports, and I'd make $70,000 by the time I was 40 years old. And that's, when I graduated college, that was my goal. I had no idea you could make considerable wealth in this profession. And so I basically just executed my game plan, and the wealth and all that came with it. But I see so many people, their whole life and every decision they make is built around how much money will it put in my pocket, and the corruption of values and the things that, you know, they make you pretend that you stand for, and then you find out, well, with this money we're giving you, you got to fake this, and then you can't do this, and. These people know they're living a lie. And so I'm not surprised. Naomi Osaka is like any other child TV star that crashes and burns from the fame and pressure and too much responsibility being put on them, getting out over your skis as an athlete or as an intellectual and a thinker. And the next thing you know, you're living a lie and you're unhappy. Jim, did you have... Greg cut you off, but go ahead.
No, you were speaking earlier and you spoke about Ali and, you know, and we called them warriors. You do realize that this Naomi Osaka and what's the other little gymnast name?
Simone Biles.
Even Cherry Richardson. These aren't warriors. Even Colin Kaepernick. These aren't warriors. These are victims. These aren't social warriors. These are social victims that are accepted by society.
A lot of truth in that. And again, you can't be a warrior if you're always looking to be a victim. And that certainly applies to Colin Kaepernick. I think it applies to what we saw from Simone Biles. You can be... an honorable victim, an unintended victim, not knowing what you're getting into, because society has, Nike is the end-all be-all. Everybody wears their shoes. Everybody wants to be a spokesman for Nike, and that's the definition of making it. I'm a spokesman for Nike. I've got some huge contract with Nike. And I don't blame these young people for not understanding what all comes along with that, that you're gonna have to sell out and become a fake person to be a spokesman for them at the highest level. Where Greg, I think you make an interesting point about parents. I looked at that Tiger documentary, and as much, and I still have a lot of respect for Earl Woods, and I know he didn't, you know, give Tiger a balanced life, but I looked at that and saw how Nike overwhelmed Earl Woods. Earl Woods, I don't think, based off what I saw on the doc, he wasn't that comfortable with Tiger being thrown into this race lane either, because he knows that's not who Tiger is. The guy wants to be Cobblin' Asian, and I don't blame him. We ripped this dude for saying he's Cobblin' Asian when he actually is. Mm-hmm. And he didn't grow up in the hood around a bunch of black people. You go watch any of the documentaries, he's out in the suburbs. He ain't really, his friends wasn't black for the most part. And then all of a sudden, Nike says, you know what? We're gonna make you the Muhammad Ali of golf, and you're breaking down all these barriers, and it's not authentic to Tiger. And so I can't say what percentage it played in what I think was an identity crisis for Tiger, in terms of falling in with the whole sexual promiscuity and just finding his identity in banging strippers and whoever. And again, all of us are capable of having that identity struggle, but for the grace of God, there still go I.
I was about to say.
Anyway, Greg, do you have any additional thoughts?
One quick thing was, I think the weaker the person and the more naive or the younger the person, the easier it is for Nike to go get them. Right. That's the easier victim to go get and start. They're more malleable and they can create whatever they want to create out of these people. But actually, on a different note, the word Cobblin' Asian actually played a part it was part of my story, because I was at the Chicago Sun-Times and Oprah's show was there at a Harpo Theater in Chicago. So she invited me and this guy from the Chicago Tribune to come watch. Hey, Tiger Woods just won the Masters. You want to come watch the filming? So I went there and she showed me around and her in the cafeteria and all. And he said, I'm a Cobblin' Asian. And so I started thinking, well, this is a black golfer saying he's not black. And so I actually wrote the story on a Tuesday, I believe. And the show was taped for Thursday. So the story came out in the Sun-Times that he said that in something I wrote before it came out on Oprah's show itself. So it was on Dan Rather and, you know, Howard Stern, and it went all over the place nationally.
I think Greg is bragging right now.
I was going to say, I thought you said that all of Greg's greatness came from you. Greg was great long before he ever met you.
Yeah, Greg.
So in other words, Greg was on Oprah's couch before you.
Almost. They didn't give him a microphone. They gave him a notebook. I got a microphone. He got a notebook.
But the funny thing about this is that they called me that day, Oprah's people, and said, Oprah's furious with you because you turned this into a race thing, and she didn't really have an intention of that, and she was really mad. It wasn't the way it was supposed to be. Then 2 days later, the show was on, and it got amazing ratings because it had gotten so much national publicity that the Oprah's people called me back 2 days after that and said, you can come anytime you want. You can have tickets for your wife and you, and we love to have you here anytime you want.
Greg.
Yeah.
I take it you've never seen The Color Purple. Have you ever seen The Color Purple?
I haven't. I've seen clips of it because of the singing.
Okay, I would say, just don't lie. Don't lie, Craig. You ain't got to lie, Craig. Listen, so therefore, I take it you've never seen Oprah's character in The Color Purple.
Again, I've watched clips on YouTube, but no is the answer.
Okay, Greg, I want you to know, Oprah knocks the hell out of this white man in the movie, okay? Okay, Oprah ain't nothing to be played with, okay? Now, if she was mad at you, you're lucky you didn't get that work from Oprah. Oh, she was really nice. Boy, she okay.
Oh, man. All right. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks.
All right, Uncle Jimmy's going to react to, or he's going to have me react, which headline is real and our approval rating? X. If you enjoy wine and you're tired of drinking the boring $10 grocery store bottles, you need to try the extreme altitude wine that comes from the mountains of Argentina. Imagine pouring a glass with your dinner that comes directly from the highest vineyards in the entire world. That's 6,000 to 9,000 feet in the air. What does all this mean for wine? A flavor unlike any wine you've ever tasted. Blackberry, leather, smoke, and little dark cherry. This stuff packs a punch, and nature does all the work. That means no dyes, no flavor additives. The guys over at Bonner Private Wines have cracked the code when it comes to getting these rare wines to Americans. The best part? They've cut out the middleman. You won't deal with any big industry markup. Visit BonnerPrivateWines.com/fearless and you'll get 50% off the wine and 50% off shipping. Just visit BonnerPrivateWines.com/fearless. That's BonnerPrivateWines.com/fearless. All right, welcome back. Uncle Jimmy's got a new little gimmick he wants to try. You got
gimmick?
Some headlines that you
a gimmick.
You got something?
Hey, man, I like to call this picking your knowledge.
Picking my knowledge.
Picking my knowledge. Yeah. This is my way of seeing, you know, letting people, giving them a look inside the demented. I mean, inside the mind. Okay.
And so you got headlines.
Yes.
And you're going to give me options, a multiple choice.
Jason, it's just real simple.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you a story, and all I want you to do is tell me which headline is true.
All right, go ahead.
It's just real simple, yep. Okay?
All right,
and I'd like to start with ivermectin.
Ivermectin.
Okay, you know, ivermectin is the medicine that Joe Rogan and
Jimmy Dodds.
Alex Jones, everybody's taking this. Let me just put it like this. If you are speaking about ivermectin, you probably believe that the earth is flat and you believe that 9/11 is an inside job. Okay, let me just put
I don't
it
know
like
how that. To respond to that. Doesn't YouTube get real crazy when you
yes!
say the word ivermectin?
Exactly.
Ivermectin,
so now,
ivermectin.
So now, in order to purchase ivermectin, I love this. In order to purchase ivermectin, some places have now said that you have to A, provide a picture of you and your horse. B, you need to provide a copy of the birth certificate of your horse. C, you need to ride your horse to the nearest pharmacy of your choice. Or D, you need to find a teacher or a clergy willing to certify that you are hung like a horse.
I guess I'm disqualified. Which one is true? You probably got to provide the birth certificate of your horse.
Okay, Jason, take a look at this right here, man.
All right.
Let me show you what you have to have, man.
What's it say? I can't
see. You have to show a picture of you and your horse.
Oh, all right, picture, not a birth certificate.
No. Yeah, you have to show a picture of it. So I just need you to know, I've already had my bout with COVID. You ain't had your bout, so just in case, I need you to know I done came up with your, I'm going to let you use a picture of my horse that I use. Chris, can we show that picture of Jason just so he can know how he gonna get his medicine? I'm just letting you know I got you taken care of.
Man, that looks like Tony Soprano with Pie Oh My. Remember Pie Oh My?
Yeah.
I got Ralphie killed.
Hey, man, will y'all please take a still shot of that? Jason's going to want that hung in his office. All right, let's keep on going here, man.
Yep.
We got this deal going on in Afghanistan with the Taliban.
The Taliban, yes.
We got the Taliban going
on. Hostages over there.
Okay. All right. So now they done took over. I need you to tell me which one of these is a true headline that's happening over there. All right.
Hold on. Taliban allows Bible. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
What's happening? Since they done took over, if they allowed Bibles throughout Afghanistan? B, they've allowed the women of Afghanistan to twerk in public from sundown to sunup? Or the Taliban immediately paints over and removes murals of George Floyd?
They didn't allow Bibles, and they sure aren't allowing twerking. So that only leaves they've done what we should do: take down murals of George Floyd. Hats off to the Taliban; they're making real progress over there.
Here you go, man.
I know they ain't passing out Bibles, so and I know they ain't letting twerking going on.
All right, man, let's keep it moving. Yeah. You're absolutely right, but you're doing pretty good here. You one for one. All right, let's go to our girl here, man. Naomi Nasasaki, right?
Naomi Osaka.
Okay, Naomi Osaka. You know she had another breakdown.
Yes, she did. We talked about that with Greg.
Okay, now, and you know, I always say that with these young athletes, it's their support group. It's their peers that's around them. Okay? So she had a breakdown. Let me ask you something, Jason. Do you think that she had this breakdown in public? Do you think that they, A, sought medical help for the young?
This is advice her friends gave her?
I'm asking you, she had a breakdown in public.
Yeah.
Did her friends, did her support group, did they seek medical help for the young lady?
Okay, I'm sure.
That's A.
Yeah.
Or did they B, did she call up her girlfriends and decide that she want to get turned up for the weekend? Maybe she decided she wanted to seek some black girl magic.
I could definitely see that.
Okay, or let me ask you this. Maybe they took her to a public place full of a bunch of people she didn't know and handed her a loaded firearm. Which one you think is the true story?
I think they most likely, they should have had her seek medical help.
You know they didn't do that.
Why didn't they?
Let's see what we have here. What's the true story here with this?
Jim, you're acting like I can read it.
Jason, they took this woman to a firing range and handed her a loaded firearm and told her to release her stress.
All right, well, she's pro Second Amendment. That'll get her kicked out of the woke mob. She's out firing guns. Good for Naomi.
You want to do one more before we get out of here, man?
Let's do one more before we get out of here
because I love this.
Be quick, but don't hurry.
All right, man, this one here is why Jason Whitlock hates LeBron James.
Why I hate, now I can answer this one, but go ahead.
Okay, first of all.
He's a fake woke mother. Anyway, go ahead.
Stop, man. First of all, some people say that you hate him because he claims to be the chosen one.
That's probably true.
And everybody in the world knows that who's the real chosen one? Jason Whitlock.
No, don't do that to me. That's blasphemous, but go ahead.
All right. Or is it the fact that you're upset at him because he has 300 more Twitter followers than you do?
That ain't it.
That's not it?
Yeah.
Okay, how about this one? How about the fact that his backup dancer is dating Adele?
You just called Rich Paul a backup dancer?
Yeah, I mean, he ain't LeBron. I mean, if it was LeBron dating Adele, you'd be like, oh, I can. You know, it's like Justin Timberlake's backup dancer dating Adele.
Nah, Rich is can more
we see,
than
that. Can we see the clip first? To see? Come on, man.
What?
How that make you feel to see your girl sitting courtside?
But I'll just say this. You as bad as Corey. That's like 2-month-old news.
But I've just now been able to get it. I need to know how you feel about it. Because, see, you downplaying the fact of how big of an Adele fan you are.
No, I'm a huge Adele fan. And Adele hung out at Wally's.
Okay.
In Beverly Hills. And I'm sure that's where her and Rich Paul connected, because Rich Paul hung out at Wally's. So.
But you hung out at Wally's.
I know.
So how'd you let that slip past you?
Because I was never in there at the same time as Adele. Had we been there at the same time? Plus, you got Tamara works at Wally's. You know, I.
So you couldn't have been.
No.
What's that song called? Pissing in the Rain? Or?
No. Setting fire to the rain.
Okay.
No. Tamara works at Wally's, and so. With Tamara there, Adele.
You didn't have the
Adele
freedom.
Adele pales in comparison to Tamara.
You didn't have the freedom
no,
that you
I'm,
thought you was gonna have.
I'm
with
just saying, I was distracted. You know.
Okay.
Tamara sings real good too.
Okay, but anyway.
She can set fire to the rain as well.
Okay, I got you. Good job, Jason. Thank you, man.
All right, can we get to our job performance for not job approval rating?
Approval rating.
For Dakre Prescott Fitzgerald, this was always one of my favorite things on Speak for Yourself. Jimmy always analogized Dakre Prescott Fitzgerald to characters in the movie Glory. So I was looking forward to this. I got Dak job performance at a 14. He only played like 5 or 6 games last year. And he's coming back off a brutal ankle injury. So I got him at a 14.
Okay, first of all, I need to let you know I am a big Dakre Fitzgerald Prescott fan. Now, I'm not making fun of this brother, because we made fun of this man. We called him Kunta Kinte. We made
you
fun
of him. No, why you on we?
We made fun of him getting his foot chopped off.
Is there a rabbit in your pocket?
And look what the hell. Look what the hell happened.
Is there a
I'm not making
fun,
look, man. We. I ain't making fun of Dacre. I give him a 10 for job performance. I give him a 10.
Jim, I will say this about you got remember your job and remember his job. Your job is to make fun of people. His job is to throw touchdown passes. So just remember that. Character. I still am high on Dak's character. I'd give him a 20.
I give him a 25. I'm higher than you are on his character. Because I believe that he is a character to the highest right now. Right now, he's playing that role of that soldier that never say die. He's playing it to the end right now. You hear him tonight. Watch. If the camera's there tonight, when he get ready to come out, he going to be like, now, men's, if we dies by the muzzle of the gun, or if we dies by the vaccine, it don't matter. We's mans, ain't we?
Have you seen Dak do the little the pregame warm up where he shakes his shoulders? And
he do that little like he didn't really wipe his booty too good and he don't want to grab it.
So he's walking up with smelly fingers before. Is that what you basically saying? He who goes to bed anyway. Authenticity, you know, Dak is pretty authentic. You know, I got him at an 18.
Yeah, I give him a 25. He's true to the game, man. He's a soldier. He's a soldier.
Yeah, he's Jerry Jones. Yeah.
Hey, right now, man, right now, he Denzel Washington in glory. He done took the shit. He gonna keep going. He gonna keep going. He gonna keep it going. I'm telling you, he's authentic.
Well, I ain't much for talking. Denzel played it real low key. In glory, I ain't really much for talking. Anyway,
I mean, but you know, if you ask a lot of these players right now about Dak, they'll say like, "What do you think?" They'd be like, "Shoes, sir." Boy, just wanted shoes for the rest of the team.
Glory is one of my favorite movies. I may watch that this weekend. All right, It Factor. I've got Dak at a 15. Man, you're down on him on It Factor.
Hey, man, you the man running on one wheel. What you expect, man? Come on, man. Come on, man. He running on a stump.
Damn. There you go with the Kunta Kinte jokes again. I've got him at a 67, which is a grease fire.
And I got him a candlelit.
Candlelit. All right, we'll see what happens.
That gonna need some candle wax on his nipples to light a fire under his head tonight.
Go very quickly before we go. Who you think wins tonight?
I'm going with Dak.
Over the Buccaneers.
Yes.
Tom Brady.
Yes.
All right. Play tomorrow.
Hey, man, look here, man. Put your money on black.
Let's put your money on Dak. That ain't the same as Brady.
Put your money on Dak. Put your money on black.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
Looking for a breakout, feeling like a standoff, nothing in life like freedom. Came like a fighter, striking like a ladder, making all this moves for freedom. I want freedom. No negotiation, my sister, no relation, we all just wanna have freedom. Sitting on the corner, never been alone, I'm breaking my back for freedom. Bless, we are living, get back, we are receiving, all deceiving, we all wanna be free. We want freedom. I just wanna be, I just wanna be.